Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're not sure how, go to paulwinkler.com/how to subscribe. All one word, how to subscribe, or click on the link in the show note.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
So I was just giving my friends in the studio a blast from the past. Leviticus, you just missed out, man.
What happened?
Well, we were talking about, you know, you have these sounds on radio, and you're driving down the road, and somebody's got a song going, and they've got like a fire engine, like a siren or police siren, or, you know, you got some of their horns honking in their song. And it just, you know, if you got the radio up loud, it just freaks you out, right?
Exactly.
I said to Arlene, yeah, have you ever heard the song Blood Rock and DOA? And it was like when we were kids, if you wanted to get creeped out, that's what you did, is you listened to that kind of stuff. And it's just sirens all the way through it. And it's just like, it's the creepiest song. I mean, you just talk about, oh man, it's a brutal thing.
I have to look that up.
You do. Okay, so for about 360 million users, company surveys suggest yes. Facebook researchers have found that 1 in 8 of its users report engaging in compulsive use of social media that impacts their sleep, their work, their parenting, their relationships, according to documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. Patterns of what the company calls problematic use mirror what is popularly known as internet addiction. And I've talked about this before. You know, you have dopamine, and there's literally a dopamine addiction going on, which is, you know, that's not a drug. We're not talking about dope. We're not talking about, you know, anything, any kind of a controlled substance or anything like that. It's what your body puts out. And literally our bodies are addicted to this chemical. And what happens is, you know, you can get dopamine in better ways. You can get it from praying, you can get it from exercise, you can get it from listening to good music. You can listen. There are a lot of good ways to get dopamine, but I'm telling you, this is the bad way that people are getting it. And they're getting all worked up over things that they see on the internet and Facebook. And of course, you hear about kids, you know, comparing themselves to other people that are all perfect and you know, let's face it, what we can do with Photoshop is nothing short of miraculous. I mean, literally, you can make yourself absolutely flawless and gorgeous and great looking no matter what you look like with Photoshop. I mean, it's just, and you can make your pictures unbelievable. I saw somebody, they posted this thing with a moon. My wife's like, oh, this moon is, this is gorgeous. And it was like a moon coming down over Sweden or something like that behind a mountain. And I'm going, if they wanted to make this thing believable, they might have made the moon 1/8 the size that they actually did, because there is no such thing as getting the moon that large. I don't care how big your telephoto lens is, because you can compress a scene and make the moon bigger with a telephoto lens. I mean, there are ways that you can actually increase the size of the moon without changing the photo totally, but you can't make it that big, number one. Number two, if you look at the front of the mountain, the part of the mountain that faces you, you can actually pick out details on it. Here's the deal. Unless you've got light coming from behind you on that mountain, you're not going to see any details on that thing. And by the way, the moon is going to be blown out. So it's just like, blown out as it's just going to be this white, big white blob. But, you know, so you do that with pictures. And after a while, you look on Facebook, you look on the internet, you go, can I believe anything I see? I mean, I think about, you know, Adolf Hitler. I don't like this guy. Next time you see a picture, he's gone from it. You know, whoops, this guy did me wrong. Guess what? Next time you see Hitler's picture with that guy, the guy's gone. You know, so much of what you see on the internet about investing is just plain false. It's plain wrong. It's like Photoshopped investing. They will only show you the part of the investment record and the return record that they want you to see. You see this with annuities all the time. Oh, look at the S&P 500 return over, and they start invariably at the year 2000. Invariably. They start literally when the S&P 500 went down 40%. Never mind that value stocks actually went up. And international small stocks actually tripled in value over the next decade. You know, because, you know, diversification and talking about diversification would hurt their cause. So you can't
do
that.
About the chart that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you've seen that.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah, in the annuities. And that's what they do. Oh, you could lose all your money. Look at this. And look at how our annuity fixes that problem. And they cherry pick a couple of years in an undiversified asset category. And they basically, I'm going to call photoshopping investing. That's it. I am coining a term. That's good, right? Can we photoshop our investments? Yes, we can do that. How do we do that? We use past performance. This is how investment managers get you to buy mutual funds. They will only show you the good. And then you want it. And then your investments are bad. So you go through, you know, investment Photoshop depression, we'll call it. I'm just going to make up terms as we go here. And then you end up chasing whatever did well yesterday and then realizing that it was fake. And then you're even more depressed because things don't work out that well. And I kind of wonder, is this going to be like cigarettes? You know, are we going to have to put like a Surgeon General warning? Facebook could be bad for your dopamine levels and make you depressed and make you anxious and cause you to miss work and cause you to lose productivity, cause you to break up your parenting relationship with your kids and cause your regular relationships to go to heck in a handbasket. And, you know, are they going to have to put a Surgeon General warning? Because that's, and you think about this, if people start to get wind of this, and they start to realize that maybe this stuff isn't that great for us, you know? Maybe face-to-face conversations, maybe dealing with people, you know, one-on-one again is maybe a better idea than, you know, going and posting pictures and hoping everybody's jealous of you for the car that you just bought or the, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, you see, they only post what is good.
Oh, sure. Well, it's interesting because it was, who was it? It was a psychologist, actually. He was doing a little thing, and he was talking about how... No, it wasn't a psychologist, a pastor was talking about this. He was actually going through Proverbs, and he mentioned how, you know, how we boast about the future because we don't know what the future holds or what it's going to bring, right? And he says, you know, let me just talk about this. You know, a lot of times we do live in the future. And we think about our lives and we think about what's going to be happening in the future. And we live in fear of what's coming down the road. And we live in, and he said, it's just the opposite. Some people will boast about what tomorrow is going to bring. They boast about where they're going to go, what they're going to get, you know, how successful they're going to be. And he says, you know, you're counting your chickens before they hatch, number one. And so often people live in that future world. And he says, it's not good. He says some people do on the other side as well. They go on the other side, and what they do is they live, and what they do is they constantly live in fear. And he said, neither one of these are good places to be. You're not given the future. We are given right now. This is where you want to be living, is right now. Live in day-tight compartments, as I always like to say.
You know, there is a group of millennials who are what they believe in, the YOLO. YOLO.
The YOLO.
You only live once.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So that's the kind of investing they're looking at, the faddish investments.
Yeah, you only live once.
So they are...
But there's a balance to be had here, though.
Well, yeah.
Which is... plan for the future.
Well, the and present and the future.
Be a good steward of whatever you've been given. No question about it. You know, you think back, you know, 2,000 years ago, and, you know, basically, he lived to age 38. You know, you might have lived to age 40, 50. You die with a good corpse.
You could die with a good corpse. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. you were. Yeah, you. Yeah,
exactly.
You didn't.
I hope so.
Yeah, you didn't end up, you know, having to live in a nursing home and have your knees go out and your hips go out on you and your mind go. You know, there comes a time for a great number of people out there in listening audience where you can't or don't want to work anymore. Or maybe your priorities change, so you do plan for the future. But, you know, I'm not talking about, and this is not an investing conversation. I guess we just made it an investing conversation, which is pretty good.
Well,
being that it's an investing show.
Well, there is. That's why it's marketing. They are marketing those kids because there are no, the way they market the kids is that there's no commission on the trading.
Right.
Okay. There's no minimum investment.
Right. There's no cost whatsoever. Uh-huh. We make money. We'd live on air here at whatever XYZ investment firm. No, they're hiding the expenses, you know, is really what they're doing. But they basically appeal to people's desire to get one over on the man.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I want to beat the man. That's what I want to beat the man. So I want and I deserve.
Well, and they also.
Low cost, no cost investments.
Like looking at the new thing. It's a bragging right.
And the more you want to get the man, the more he's going to get you.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was, you know, the Malcolm Gladwell. You know, I did that whole thing on Malcolm Gladwell, you know, where he was talking about the mountain climber.
Okay.
You know, this guy that's like a top CIA agent, best of the best of the best of the best, meets the top agent in Cuba. And the guy goes, I will only reveal my secrets to the mountain climber. So the guy, top guy in Cuba, goes and talks to the mountain climber. And mountain climber, you know, makes sure he is who he is. And the guy goes, I know this guy. You know, I know Marcos, whatever. You know, the guy's name, he comes to name some other guy. And he goes, how do you know Marcos? Well, he was your top guy. He gave you all of Cuba's secrets. And he gave you the photocopies of their secret documents. And he goes, yeah, how did you know that? And he goes, he worked for us. And then he goes, yeah, no kidding. So then he goes, Pablo. And, you know, how do you know Pablo? Well, he gave you all the information on Cuba's military, you know, their abilities. How do you know him? Well, he worked for us. And he's going through one. And the point Malcolm Gladwell is making. Mm-hmm. Is that the smarter you are and the smarter you think you are, the more easy you are to fool. I mean, no joke, seriously. And that's what investment firms are doing day after day after day. They are fooling people and they don't even realize that they're fooling people. How on earth did I... I started this on Facebook. How did I end up on Cuban... How does this happen?
Well.
So I'm thinking, is this going to be a Surgeon General warning? In one document.
No, it's an SEC warning, probably.
And then they're literally talking about, you know, sleep disruption, delaying, reducing sleep hours due to loss of time control, waking up. Chasing. Yeah, Facebook. Well, you know, waking up, checking Facebook. Prolonging a return to sleep loss due to disturbing content, you know, politics, violence, and that's it. Oh, you want to get somebody really scared? Start talking about how the world is going to end. You know, and all you do is you focus your entire attention and your amygdala, you know, that's your fear center of your brain, kicks into overdrive. It shuts down the frontal lobe. I mean, this is the science. It shuts it down, and you are no longer even thinking about the stuff you're reading. You're so triggered.
Distracted. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You are triggered. Uh-huh. And then what do? In an emotional state, you make decisions. And this is where investors get in big, big trouble. The emotions kick in, and it is too easy to get sucked in and make a really bad decision. So one of the things that I did was say, I was doing a little research. And, you know, here is the big issue that you run into when you're putting money in an investment company. selling based on past performance, A, and selling based on familiarity bias. There's a familiarity bias. And the thing that happens is we're familiar with certain areas of the market. We're not familiar with other areas of the market. Big U.S. companies we're really, really familiar with. Under Trump, we had great run-up in that particular area of the market, very, very high run-up. So what I did was I did something recently. I was looking at one fund company, Vanguard, and then what I did is I ran the numbers. I talked about it on here. And I said, well, you know, let me see what happens with Fidelity, another huge fund company. So what I did was this. Morningstar, my software is second to none. And the ability to do some research on this is absolutely phenomenal. Hats off to Morningstar with the data gathering that they do. I don't use them for looking at funds as far as the ratings go or anything like that. But, you know, I use a version of the software that's between $10,000 and $15,000 a year just to get access to the data. So it's really, it's phenomenal, the access you can get to data out there. But what I did is I pulled up a search and I said, well, what about a fund name? Let's take a fund name and it contains Fidelity. And then I did oldest share class, which means the first share class that they put out of the fund. So mutual funds have different share classes. You'll have an A share where there might be a front end commission. You'll have a B share, which is back end commission or back end load if you leave. C share, you got a flat. You don't see Bs very often anymore. Cs, you don't even see that much. You don't even see that very often anymore. They're still out there though, where you have a flat extra fee that's paid to the advisor that sells it. And then you'll have like share classes with institutional. You might have R share classes, R1, R2, R3, R4, R5, R6, you know, and that's going to be retirement type of vehicles, things like that. And I did that oldest share class, and I did broad category group, which was stocks, equities is what I chose. And then I looked at my style box. Now, style box is it large? Is it small? Is it medium-sized companies? Is it value? Is it blend? Is it growth? If it's large value, then it's going to be upper left-hand quadrant, large value stocks, big distressed companies. If it is the right-hand top box, it's going to be large growth, which is going to be, you're going to be large growth-oriented, very well-liked companies, small companies, you know, so on and so forth, right? And what I did is I just said, give me all of the mutual funds that they manage that are in large growth. And number, 30. And then I said, how many are investing in large blend? 15. So we got a lot of different funds. First of all, the first thing to point out right there, Arlene, right?
Mm-hmm.
30 mutual funds investing in one area of the market?
Yeah, because it's familiar.
And?
What's inside.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the other reason, about a lot of those 30 is probably going to do well, right?
Yeah,
We just market whoever does well out of those 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what it gets down to. It's one of the reasons fund companies do that kind of stuff. So you get 45 funds. And then what I did is how many funds they've got, and then I said, okay, what's the size? In all of the funds that are equity only, just investing in stocks, not funds that are investing in asset allocation models, because I deal with that a lot of times. You hear me talk a little bit disparagingly regarding, you know, these target date funds and those types of funds, right?
So lifestyle.
Right. Life strategy. Sure. Mm-hmm. Lifestyle funds. Right. Yep. Asset allocation, blend, balanced funds, those types of things.
They also call that model.
Models. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yep. Arlene. Exactly. So what I did is I just said, okay, let's just exclude all those. Just look at equities because that I'm assuming they're being chosen because somebody's putting together their own model. That's the reason I did it this way. You're putting your own model together when you're choosing funds that are investing in equities and large blend. And so you should be diversifying and putting money in various sections, right? So assets under management in blend, I couldn't believe this. $630 billion. That's a huge amount of money that they manage in that one asset category. $405 billion in growth. So that's $1,035,000,000,000. I mean, just think about that. Just wrap your mind around that, a fund company managing that much money, especially with what I'm about to tell you. Okay, so you add this up, $1,035,686,959,000, $959,172. Okay. Now, That is the amount that's in blend or growth stocks, right? In U.S. stocks, by the way. That was all U.S., 90% U.S. So what is their total of assets in U.S. funds? $1.227 trillion. So literally 84% of the money, 84% is in large blend or large growth stocks. So that means we're missing value, small value, micro cap, small companies. We're missing mid cap, meaning, and not that I want that, but mid cap or mid cap blend and mid cap value or small cap growth stocks. We're missing all of those. 84% of the money is in that area right there, which are what? The most familiar companies. S&P 500 is a blend index, for example. Okay, so I did that. Now compare that to, you know, what I would hold in that 15% of my U.S. portfolio to give you a comparison. 84% to my 15. Way, way overweighted, in my humble opinion. Way overweighted. Then what I did is I did the same thing for international. What did I find? It was even worse. 87% was in the big international companies. 87% of the money was in the big international companies. So literally, these companies, if you look at them from a price standpoint, much, much higher price. Now, if you looked at the returns under Trump, you would have gone, wow, the returns are fairly decent for this area of the market. And they were. And that is why I call this the perfect storm. The most familiar area of the market had good returns for 4 years. Now, it hasn't been that way since. Since Trump's been out of office, it has not been that way. But you have mutual fund managers living on what? 5-year track record. So they live and breathe and eat and sleep and market based on 5-year track record, and they still have a story to tell for a while. And anyway, for a while. And that, to me, is one of the great problems in the investing industry, is that fund companies put portfolios together too often, I believe, for marketing purposes. But there's also another side of it. You almost sound like you're going to say something, and you may say what I'm thinking.
I don't know what you're thinking.
Well, that's true. Nobody does.
That's scary, though.
No, what I'm thinking, though, is you know, how many people use this fund company are actually do-it-yourself investors, and they are making the mistakes themselves. It's not even Fidelity's fault. They're willingly choosing mutual funds based on past performance, and they're sticking their money in that. Well, it is Fidelity's fault because they've got the portfolios that they put together and their target date funds, and they're put together the same way. So I'm not going to let them off the hook that easy. Yeah, if you look at their target date funds, you will find that it's typically anywhere from 93 to 95% of the portfolio is in large companies, medium-sized companies. About 5 to 7% in small. That's it. Poorly, poorly diversified. It's a proverb. And that's really what's going on. So tell you what, let's take a quick break. And you know, this is not just them. I mean, I'm telling you, this is the industry, guys. If you don't realize this is happening, you're the one that gets to retirement with...
Well, they forget that there are other markets in the ticker space, in the ticker...
Sure.
You know?
Other markets that they could be investing in, you mean?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
So they forget.
Well, they do, but the thing is that because they're not familiar with them, nobody talks about them, you don't hear about them, and it's really, really hard to be disciplined. Now, a lot of times their funds in those areas of the market are terrible. Like, you know, international small value, an area that that would be an area I want to have in my portfolio to diversify me internationally, way better. They don't even have a fund in that area. They don't even have one fund.
Or emerging.
Or emerging value, yeah. Or emerging small, right? Yeah, it's just missing.
Oh, but because they think that it's China. No,
no. I mean,
and there's China, and there's China.
Yeah, good grief. No. If you look at emerging countries, you might have good. That's a good. That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. I didn't really thought about that, Arlene. That is a really good point. A lot of people, when they think of emerging markets, all they think about is China. They don't think about You know, they don't think about all of the other countries out there, Singapore and Thailand and South Korea and Israel. I mean, that's
Israel.
It's actually,
yeah. Even Egypt.
Yeah. You look at, there's a good laundry list of countries that are actually considered emerging market countries.
And the Philippines.
The U.S., the Philippines, right. There you go.
I'm so biased.
I know that it wouldn't be your bias at all, would it? No, yeah. Not at all. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors. And confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., PWI, an investment advisor registered in the state of Tennessee.